"Damn it," I repeated, feeling only a little bad about swearing on a church's doorstep. If the priest was in bed, he'd be off in Moroi staff housing and inaccessible. "I need to..." The door opened, and Father Andrew peered out at us. He looked surprised, but not upset. "Rose? Christian? Is something wrong?" "I have to ask you a question," I told him. "It won't take long." His surprise grew, but he stepped aside so we could enter. We all stopped and stood in the chapel's lobby, just outside the main sanctuary. "I was just about to go home for the night," Father Andrew told us. "I was shutting everything down." "You told me that St. Vladimir lived a long life and died of old age. Is that true?"
"Yes," he said slowly. "To the best of my knowledge, all the books I've read, including the latest ones, say as much."
"But what about Anna?" I demanded. I sounded like I was on the verge of hysteria, which I kind of was.
"What about her?"
"What happened to her? How did she die?" All this time, Lissa and I had worried about Vlad's outcome. We'd never considered Anna's.
"Oh, well," Father Andrew sighed. "Her end wasn't good, I'm afraid. She spent her whole life protecting him, though there are hints that in her old age she started growing a little unstable, too. And then..."
"And then?" I asked.
Christian was looking between the priest and me, completely lost. "And then, well, a couple months after St. Vladimir passed on, she committed suicide."
I squeezed my eyes shut for half a second and then opened them. This was what I'd been afraid of.
"I'm sorry," Father Andrew said. "I know how closely you've followed their story. I didn't even learn this about her until reading it recently. Taking one's life is a sin, of course. But, well, considering how close they were, it's not hard to imagine how she may have felt when he was gone."
"And you also said that she was starting to go a little crazy." He nodded and spread his hands out.
"It's hard to say what that poor woman was thinking. Many factors were probably involved. Why was this so pressing?"
I shook my head. "It's a long story. Thanks for helping me." Christian and I were halfway to the dorm before he finally asked, "What was that all about? I remember when you guys were looking into this. Vladimir and Anna were like Lissa and you, right?"
"Yeah," I said glumly.
"Look, I don't want to get between you guys, but please don't tell Lissa about this. Not until I find out more. Just tell her, I don't know. I'll tell her that I suddenly panicked because I thought I had more community service scheduled."
"Both of us lying to her, huh?"
"I hate it, believe me, but it's also best for her at the moment. Because if Lissa knew that she might potentially make me insane, yeah, she'd take that hard. She'd want to stop working her magic. Of course, that's what I'd always wanted, and yet I'd felt that joy in her when she used it. Could I take that away from her? Could I sacrifice myself?" There was no easy answer, and I couldn't start jumping to conclusions, not until I knew more. Christian agreed to keep it secret, and by the time we joined the others, it was almost time for curfew anyway. We had only about a half hour together, and then we all split off for bed, including me, since the part-time field experience agreement said I couldn't do nighttime duty. The Strigoi risk was low in general anyway, and my instructors were more concerned about me getting a full night's sleep. So when curfew came, I walked back to the Dampier dorm alone. And then, when I was almost there, he appeared again. Mason. I came to an abrupt halt and glanced around me, wishing someone else was there to witness this and settle the crazy or not thing once and for all. His pearly form stood there, hands in the pockets of his coat in an almost casual way that somehow made the experience that much weirder. "Well," I said, feeling surprisingly calm despite the sorrow that washed over me whenever I saw him. "Glad to see you're alone again. I didn't really like the extras on the plane." He stared, expression blank and eyes sad. It made me feel worse, guilt twisting my stomach into knots. I broke. "What are you?"
I cried. Are you real? Am I going crazy? To my surprise, he nodded.
Which?
I squeaked. Yes, you're real? He nodded.
Yes, I'm crazy?
He shook his head. Well, I said, forcing a joke through my hurricane of emotions. That's a relief, but honestly, what else would you say if you were a hallucination? Mason just stared. I glanced around again, wishing someone would come by.
Why are you here?
Are you mad at us and looking for revenge? He shook his head, and something in me relaxed. Until that moment, I hadn't realized how worried I'd been about that. The guilt and grief had been wound up so tightly in me. Him blaming me, just as Ryan had seemed inevitable.
Are you having trouble finding peace?
Mason nodded and seemed to grow sadder. I thought back to his final moments and swallowed back tears. I'd probably have a hard time finding peace, too, taken from my life before it began.
Is there more than that, though? Another reason you keep coming to me?
He nodded.
What?
I asked. There were too many questions lately. I needed answers.
What is it? What do I need to do?
But anything other than a yes or no question was beyond us, apparently. He opened his mouth as though he would say something. He looked like he was trying hard, like Adrian had with the plant, but no sound came out.
I'm sorry, I whispered. I'm sorry, I don't understand, and I'm sorry for everything else.
Mason gave me one last wistful look, and then vanished. Chapter 20. Let's talk about your mother, I sighed. What about her? It was my first day of counseling, and so far, I wasn't impressed. Last night's Mason sighting was probably something I should have brought up right away, but I didn't want school officials to have any more reason to think I was losing my mind, even if I was. And honestly, I didn't know I was for sure. Adrian's analysis of my aura and the story of Anna certainly lent credence to me being on the road to Crazyville. Yet, I didn't feel crazy. Did crazy people know if they really were? Adrian had said they didn't. Crazy itself was a weird term. I'd learned enough about psychology to know that it was also a very broad classification. Most forms of mental illness were actually very specific and had select symptoms. Anxiety, depression, mood swings, etc. I didn't know where I fell on that scale, if I did at all.
How do you feel about her? Continued the counselor. About your mother.
That she's a great guardian and a so-so mother. The counselor, whose name was Deirdre, wrote something in her notebook. She was blonde and Maroy slim, clad in a teal cashmere sweater dress. She actually didn't look much older than me, but certificates on her desk swore she had all sorts of degrees in psychotherapy. Her office was in the administrative building, the same place the headmistress's office was, and where all other sorts of academy business was conducted. I'd kind of been hoping for a couch to lie on, like therapists always had on TV, but the best I had was a chair. It was a comfy chair, at least. The walls were covered in nature pictures, things like butterflies and daffodils. I guess they were supposed to be soothing.
Do you want to elaborate on so-so? Deirdre asked. It's an upgrade. A month ago, I would have said horrible. What's this have to do with Mason?
Do you want to talk about Mason?
I'd noticed she had a habit of answering my questions with questions.
I don't know, I admitted. I guess that's what I'm here for.
How do you feel about him? About his death?
Sad? How else should I feel?
Angry?
I thought about the Strigoi, their leering faces and casual attitudes toward killing.
Yeah, a little.
Guilty?
Sure, of course.
Why, of course?
'Cause it's my fault he was there. I'd upset him. And he had this thing to prove, I told him where the Strigoi were, and I wasn't supposed to. If he hadn't known about them, he wouldn't have done it. He'd still be alive.
You don't think he was responsible for his own actions? That he was the one who chose to do that?
Well, yeah, I guess he did. I didn't make him do it.
Any other reason you might feel guilty?
I looked away from her and focused on a picture of a ladybug. He liked me. Like, romantically. We kind of dated, but I couldn't get into it. That hurt him.
Why couldn't you get into it?
I don't know, I said. The image of his body lying on the floor flashed into my mind and I shoved it away. No way would I cry in front of Deirdre.
That's the thing. I should have. He was nice. He was funny. We got along really well, but it just didn't feel right. Even kissing or anything like that. I eventually just couldn't do it.
Do you feel like you have a problem with intimate contact?
What do you...
Oh, no, of course not.
Have you ever had sex with anyone?
No. Are you saying I should have?
Do you think you should have?
Damn. I thought I had her. I'd thought for sure she wouldn't have a question for that one. Mason wasn't the right person.
Is there someone else? Someone you think might be the right person?
I hesitated. I'd lost track of how this related to me seeing ghosts. According to some paperwork I'd signed, everything we said in here was confidential. She couldn't tell anyone unless I was a danger to myself or doing something illegal. I wasn't entirely sure where a relationship with an older man fell there.
Yeah, but I can't tell you who he is.
How long have you known him?
Almost 6 months.
Do you feel close?
Yeah, sure, but we're not.
How exactly did one describe this?
We're not actually really involved. He's kind of unavailable.
She could think what she wanted about that. Like that maybe I was interested in a guy with a girlfriend.
Is he the reason you couldn't get close to Mason?
Yes.
And is he holding you back from dating someone else?
Well, he's not, like, purposely doing anything.
But as long as you care about him, you're not interested in anyone else.
Right. But it doesn't matter. I probably shouldn't even be dating anyone at all.
Why not?
Because there's no time. I'm training to be a guardian. I have to give all of my attention to Lyssa.
And you don't think you can do that and be romantically involved with someone?
I shook my head. No. I have to be willing to lay down my life for hers. I can't be distracted by someone else. We have this saying with the guardians. They come first. You guys. Maroi.
And so you figure you'll always have to put Lyssa's needs ahead of yours?
Of course.
I frowned. What else would I do? I'm going to be her guardian.
How does that make you feel, giving up what you want for her?
She's my best friend, and she's the last of her family.
That's not what I asked.
Yeah, but...
I stopped.
Hey, you didn't ask a question.
You think I always ask questions?
Never mind. Look, I love Lyssa. I'm happy to spend my life protecting her. End of story. Besides, are you, a Maroi, going to tell me, a Dampier, that I shouldn't be putting Maroi first? You know how the system works.
I do, she said. But I'm not here to analyze it. I'm here to help you get better.
Seems like you might not be able to do one without the other.
Deirdre's lips quirked into a smile. And then her eyes flicked to the clock.
We're out of time today. We'll have to pick this up next time.
I crossed my arms over my chest.
I thought you'd be giving me some kind of awesome advice or telling me what to do, but you just kept making me talk.
She laughed softly.
Therapy isn't so much about what I think as you do.
Then why do it at all?
Because we don't always know what it is we're thinking or feeling. When you have a guide, it's easier to figure things out. You'll often discover that you already know what to do.
I can help you ask questions and go places you might not have on your own. Well, you're good at the question part, I noted dryly.
While I don't have any awesome advice, I do have some things I want you to think about for when we talk again.
She glanced down at her notepad and tapped it with her pencil while she thought.
First, I want you to think again about what I asked about Lyssa, how you really feel about dedicating your life to her.
I already told you.
I know.
Just think about it some more. If your answer's the same, that's fine.
Then I want you to consider something else. I want you to think about whether maybe the reason you're attracted to this unavailable guy is because he's unavailable.
That's crazy. That doesn't make any sense.
Is it? You just told me that you can't ever be involved with anyone. Do you think it's possible that wanting someone you can't have is your subconscious mind's way of coping? If it's possible for you to have him, then you never have to confront feelings conflicted about Lyssa. You'll never have to choose.
This is confusing, I grumbled.
It's supposed to be. That's why I'm here.
What's this have to do with Mason?
It has to do with you, Rose. That's what's important.
I left therapy feeling like my brain had melted. I also kind of felt like I'd been on trial. If Deirdre had been there to grill Victor, they probably would have finished up in half the time. I also thought Deirdre had totally been going in the wrong direction. Of course I didn't resent Lyssa. And the thought that I'd fallen for Dimitri because I couldn't have him was ridiculous. I'd never even thought of the conflict with guarding until he'd mentioned it. I'd fallen for him because, well, because he was Dimitri. Because he was sweet, strong, funny, fierce, and gorgeous. Because he understood me. And yet, as I walked back to the commons, I found her question spinning around in my brain. I might not have been thinking about a relationship distracting us in our guard duties, but I'd certainly known from the start that his age and job were huge barriers. Could that have really played a part? Had some piece of me known we could never really have anything, thus allowing me to always stay dedicated to Lyssa? No, I decided firmly. That was ridiculous. Deirdre might be good at asking questions, but she was clearly asking the wrong ones.
Rose!
I looked to my right and saw Adrian cutting across the lawn toward me, oblivious to the slush's effects on his designer shoes.
Did you just call me Rose? I asked. And not Little Dampier? I don't think that's ever happened.
It happens all the time, he countered, catching up to me.
We stepped inside the commons. School was in session, so the halls were empty.
Where's your better half?
He asked.
Christian?
No, Lyssa. You can tell where she is, right?
Yeah, I can tell because it's last period and she's in class like everyone else. You keep forgetting that for the rest of us, this is school.
He looked disappointed.
I found more case files I wanted to talk to her about. More super compulsion stuff.
Whoa, you've been doing something productive? I'm impressed.
You're one to talk, he said. Especially considering your whole existence here revolves around beating people up. You damn peers are uncivilized, but then that's why we love you.
Actually, I mused, we aren't the only ones doing beatings lately. I'd nearly forgotten about my Royal Fight Club mystery. There were so many things I had to worry about lately. It was like trying to hold water in my hands. It was a long shot, but I had to ask him.
Does the word mana mean anything to you?
He leaned against the wall and reached for his cigarettes.
Sure.
You're inside the school, I warned.
What?
Oh, right. With a sigh, he put the pack back in his coat.
Don't half of you study Romanian here? It means hand.
I study English here.
Hand. That didn't make any sense.
Why the interest in translation?
I don't know. I think I got it wrong. I thought it had some connection to this thing that's been going on with these royals.
Recognition flashed in his eyes. Oh, Lord, not that.
Are they really doing it here, too?
Doing what?
The mana? The hand? It's this stupid secret society that pops up at schools. We had a chapter of it back at Adler. It's mostly a bunch of royals getting together and having secret meetings to talk about how much better they are than everyone else.
That's it, then, I said. The pieces clicked together. That's Jesse and Ralph's little group, the one they tried to get Christian to join. That's what this Mana is.
Him?
Adrian laughed.
They must be desperate. And I don't mean that as a slam against Christian. He's just not really the type to get into that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, he turned them down pretty hard. What's the point of this secret society exactly?
He shrugged. The same as any other. It's a way to make people feel better about themselves. Everyone likes feeling special. Being part of an elite group is a way to do that.
But you weren't part of it.
No need.
I already know I'm special. Jesse and Ralph made it sound like royals had to stick together because of all the controversies that are going on, about fighting and guardians and all that. They made it sound like they could do something about it.
Not at this age, said Adrian. Mostly all they can do is talk. When they get older, Mana members sometimes cut deals for each other and still have secret meetings.
That's it, then? They're just hanging out and talking to hear themselves talk?
He turned contemplative. Well, yes, of course they're doing lots of that, but I mean, whenever these little chapters form, there's usually something specific they want to do in secret. Each group's kind of different that way, so this one's probably got some plan or scheme or whatever.
A plan or scheme? I didn't like the sound of that, especially with Jesse and Ralph. You know a lot for someone who wasn't in it.
My dad was. He never talks much about it, hence the secret part. But I picked up things, and then I heard about it while I was at school.
I leaned against the wall. The clock across the hall told me classes were almost over. Did you hear anything about them beating up people? There are at least 4 Moroi I know of who were attacked, and they won't talk about it.
Who? Like non-royals?
No, other royals.
That doesn't make any sense. The whole point of it is for elite royals to band together to protect themselves from change. Unless, perhaps, they're going after royals who refuse or are supporting non-royals.
Maybe. But one of them was Jesse's brother, and Jesse seems to be a founding member. Seems like he'd have to make the cut. And they didn't do anything when Christian refused. Adrian spread his hands wide.
Even I don't know everything. And like I said, this one's probably got its own little agenda they're keeping hidden.
I sighed in frustration, and he gave me a curious look.
Why do you care so much?
Because it isn't right. The people I saw were in bad shape. If some group's going around and ganging up on victims, they need to be stopped.
Adrian laughed and played with a strand of my hair. You can't save everyone, though God knows you try.
I just want to do what's right. I remembered Dimitri's comments about Westerns and couldn't help a small smile. I need to bring justice where it's needed.
The crazy thing, little Dampier, is that you mean that. I can tell by your aura.
What? Are you saying it's not black anymore?
No. Still dark, definitely. But it's got a little light in it. Streaks of gold. Like sunlight.
Maybe your theory about me catching it from Lyssa is wrong, then. I'd been trying very hard not to think about that last night, when I'd learned about Anna. Mentioning it now stirred up all those fears all over again. Insanity. Suicide.
Depends, he said. When was the last time you saw her?
I gave him a light punch. You have no clue, do you? You're making this up as you go along. He caught my wrist and pulled me closer.
Isn't that the way you normally operate?
I grinned in spite of myself. This close to him, I could appreciate just how lovely the green of his eyes was. In fact, despite continually making fun of him, I couldn't deny that the rest of him was pretty good-looking, too. His fingers were warm on my wrist, and there was something kind of sexy about the way he held it. Thinking back to Deirdre's words, I tried to assess how it all made me feel. The Queen's warnings aside, Adrian was a guy who was technically available. Was I attracted to him? Did I get a thrill out of this? The answer? No. Not in the same way I did with Dimitri. Adrian was sexy in his way, but he didn't drive me wild the way Dimitri did. Was it because Adrian was so readily available? Was Deirdre right about me purposely wanting relationships that were impossible?
You know, he said, interrupting my thoughts. Under any other circumstances, this would be hot. Instead, you're looking at me like I'm some kind of science fair project.
That was exactly how I was treating this, actually. Why don't you ever use compulsion on me? I asked. And I don't mean just to stop me from getting in fights.
Because half the fun of you is that you're so difficult.
A new idea occurred to me. Do it.
Do what?
Use compulsion on me. What?
It was another of those rare, shocked Adrian moments.
Use compulsion to make me want to kiss you, except you have to promise not to actually kiss me.
That's pretty weird. And when I say something's weird, you know it's serious.
Please? He sighed and then focused his eyes right on me. It was like drowning in seas of green. There was nothing in the world except for those eyes.
I want to kiss you, Rose, he said softly. And I want you to want me too.
Every aspect of his body, his lips, his hands, his scent suddenly overpowered me. I felt warm all over. I wanted him to kiss me with every ounce of my being. There was nothing in life I wanted more than that kiss. I tilted my face up toward his, and he leaned down. I could practically taste his lips.
Do you want to? He asked, voice still like velvet. Do you want to kiss me?
Did I ever? Everything around me had blurred. Only his lips were in focus. Yes, I said. His face moved closer, his mouth only a breath away from mine. We were so, so close. And then he stopped.
We're done, he said, stepping back.
I snapped out of it instantly. The dreamy haze was gone, as was the yearning in my body. But I'd discovered something. Under compulsion, I had definitely wanted him to kiss me. Yet even under compulsion, it hadn't been the electric, all-encompassing feeling I had when I was with Dimitri. That feeling that we were practically the same person and were bound by forces bigger than both of us. With Adrian, it had simply been mechanical. Deirdre had been wrong. If my attraction to Dimitri was just some subconscious reaction, then it should have been as superficial as that forced attraction to Adrian. Yet they were completely different. With Dimitri, it was love, not just some trick my mind was playing on me.
Hmm,
I said.
Hmm?
Asked Adrian, eyeing me with amusement.
Hmm.
The third hmm hadn't come from either of us. I looked across the hall and saw Christian watching us. I separated from Adrian just as the bell rang. The sounds of students pouring out of classrooms rumbled through the hallway.
Now I can see Lissa, said Adrian happily. Rose, will you come with me to the feeders? Asked Christian.
He spoke in a flat tone and his expression was unreadable.
I'm not guarding you today.
Yeah, well, I miss your charming company.
I told Adrian goodbye and cut through the cafeteria with Christian.
What's up?
I asked.
You tell me, he said. You were the one about ready to start making out with Adrian.
It was an experiment, I said. It was part of my therapy.
What the hell kind of therapy are you in?
We reached the feeder's room. Somehow, despite him getting out of class early, there were still a few people ahead of us in line.
Why do you care? I asked him. You should be happy. It means he isn't moving in on Lissa.
He could be moving in on both of you.
What are you, my big brother now?
Annoyed, he said. That's what I am.
I looked beyond him and saw Jesse and Ralph enter.
Well, keep it to yourself. Our good friends will overhear.
Jesse, however, was too busy to hear, because he was arguing with the feeding coordinator.
"I don't have time to wait," he told her. "I've got to be somewhere."
She pointed to us and the others in line. "These people are ahead of you." Jesse met her eyes and smiled.
"You can make an exception this time."
"Yeah, he's in a hurry," added Ralph in a voice I'd never heard him use before. It was smooth and less grating than usual. "Just write his name down at the top of the list." The coordinator looked like she was going to tell them off, but then a funny, distracted look came over her face. She glanced at her clipboard and wrote something. A few seconds after she looked away, her head jerked up again, eyes sharp once more. She frowned. "What was I doing?"
"You were signing me up," said Jesse. He pointed at the board. "See?"
She looked down, startled.
"Why is your name first? Didn't you just get here?"
"We were here earlier and checked in. You told us it was okay."
She looked down again, clearly puzzled. She didn't remember them coming earlier, because they hadn't. But she apparently couldn't figure out why Jesse's name was at the top now. A moment later, she shrugged and must have decided it wasn't worth overthinking. "Stand with the others. I'll call you next." As soon as Jesse and Ralph came near us, I turned on them.
"You just used compulsion on her," I hissed.
Jesse looked panicked for a fraction of a second. Then his normal swagger took over.
"Whatever. I just convinced her, that's all."
"What, are you going to try to tell on me or something?"
"Nothing to tell," scoffed Christian.
"That was the worst compulsion I've ever seen."
"Like you've seen compulsion,"
said Ralph.
"Plenty," said Christian, "from people prettier than you. Of course, maybe that's part of why yours isn't as good."
Ralph seemed highly offended at not being considered pretty, but Jesse just nudged him and started to turn away.
Forget him. He had his chance.
His chance at... I remembered how Brandon had attempted weak compulsion when trying to convince me his bruises were nothing. Jill had said that Brett Ozera actually had convinced a teacher that his were nothing. The teacher had dropped the matter, much to Jill's surprise. Brett must have used compulsion. Light bulbs went off in different parts of my brain. The connections were all around me. The problem was, I couldn't untangle the wires quite yet. "That's what this is about, isn't it? Your stupid mana and its need to beat up on people. It's got something to do with compulsion." I didn't understand how it all fit together, but the surprised look on Jesse's face told me I was onto something, even though he said,
"You don't know what you're talking about."
I pushed forward, hoping some blind hits would make him mad and say something he wasn't supposed to. "What's the point? Does it give you guys some kind of power trip to do these little tricks? That's all they are, you know. You seriously don't know the first thing about compulsion. I've seen compulsion that would make you do handstands and throw yourself out a window."
"We're learning more than you can even imagine," said Jesse. "And when I find out who told..."
He didn't have a chance to finish his threat, because he was called over to the feeder just then. He and Ralph stalked away, and Christian immediately turned to me. "What's going on? What's mana?" I gave him a hasty recap of Adrian's explanation. "That's what they wanted you to join. They must secretly be practicing compulsion. Adrian said these groups are always royals who have some plan to change and control things in dangerous times. They must think compulsion is the answer. It's what they meant when they told you they had ways to help you get what you wanted.
If they knew how crappy your compulsion was, they probably wouldn't have asked."
He scowled, not liking me reminding him of the one time he'd attempted, and failed, to compel someone at the ski lodge.
"So where's the beating people up part come in?"
"That's the mystery," I said. Christian was summoned over to feed just then, and I put my theories on hold until I could get more info and take action. I noticed which feeder we were being led to. "Is that Alice again? How do you always get her? Do you request her?"
No, but I think some people specifically un-request her.
Alice was happy to see us, as always.
Rose, are you still keeping us safe?
I will if they'll let me, I told her.
Don't be too hasty,
she warned.
Conserve your strength. If you're too eager to fight the undead, you may find yourselves joining them. Then you'd never see us again, and we'd be very sad.
Yes, said Christian. I'd cry into my pillow every night. I resisted the urge to kick him. Well, I couldn't visit if I was Strigoi, yeah, but hopefully I'd just die a normal death. Then I could come see you as a ghost. How sad, I thought, that I was now making jokes about the very thing that was freaking me out lately. Alice found no amusement in it whatsoever. She shook her head.
No, you wouldn't. The wards would keep you out.
The wards only keep Strigoi out, I reminded her gently. A defiant look replaced her scattered one.
The wards keep anything that isn't alive out, dead or undead.
Now you've done it, said Christian.
The wards don't keep ghosts out, I said. I've seen them. Considering Alice's own instability, I didn't mind discussing mine with her. In fact, it was kind of refreshing to talk about this stuff with someone who wouldn't judge me. Indeed, she treated this as perfectly normal conversation.
If you've seen ghosts, then we're not safe anymore.
I told you last time, the security's too good.
Maybe someone made a mistake,
she argued, sounding remarkably coherent.
Maybe someone missed something. Wards are made of magic. Magic is alive. Ghosts can't cross them for the same reason as Strigoi. They aren't alive. If you saw a ghost, the wards have failed.
She paused.
Or you're crazy.
Christian laughed out loud.
There you go, Rose, straight from the source.
I shot him a glare. He smiled at Alice.
In Rose's defense, though, I think she's right about the wards. The school checks them all the time. The only place guarded better than here is the royal court, and both places are overflowing with guardians. Stop being so paranoid.
He fed, and I glanced away. I should have known better than to listen to Alice. She was hardly a reputable source of information, even if she'd been around for a while. And yet, her weird logic did make sense. If wards kept Strigoi out, why not ghosts? True, Strigoi were the dead who had come back to walk the earth, but her point was sound. All of them were dead. But Christian and I were right, too. The wards around the school were solid. It took a lot of power to lay wards. Not every Moroi home could have them. But places like schools and the royal court had theirs maintained diligently. The royal court. I'd had no ghostly encounters whatsoever while we were there. Yet, that had been incredibly stressful. If my sightings were stress-induced, wouldn't the court and encounters with Victor and the Queen have provided great opportunities for them to occur? The fact that I'd seen nothing seemed to negate the PTSD theory. I hadn't seen ghosts until we'd landed at the Martinville airport, which didn't have wards. I nearly gasped. The court had strong wards. I'd seen no ghosts. The airport, which was part of the human world, had no wards. I'd been bombarded with ghosts there. I'd also seen flashes of them in the plane, which was unwarded when we were in the air. I looked over at Alice and Christian. They were just about finished. Could she be right? Did wards keep out ghosts? And if so, what was going on with the school? If the wards were intact, I should see nothing, just like at court. If the wards were broken, I should be overrun, just like at the airport. Instead, the academy was somewhere in the middle. I had sightings only occasionally. It didn't make sense. The only thing I knew for sure was that if something was going wrong with the school's wards, then I wasn't the only one in danger.
Chapter 21. I could hardly wait for my day to end. I'd promised Lissa I'd hang out with her and the others after school. It should have been fun, but the minutes dragged by. I was too restless. When curfew came around, I split off from them and ran back to my dorm. I asked the woman at the front desk if she could call up to Dimitri's room. Off limits to students, because I had an urgent question for him. She had just picked up the phone when Celeste walked past. "He's not there," she told me. She had a large bruise on the side of her face. Some novice had gotten the better of her. Some novice who wasn't me. "I think he was going to the chapel. You'll have to see him tomorrow. You can't be there and back before curfew comes." I nodded meekly and acted like I was heading for the student wing. Instead, as soon as I was out of sight, I headed back outside again and ran to the chapel. She was right. I wasn't going to make curfew. But hopefully, Dimitri could make sure I got back without getting in trouble. The chapel's doors were unlocked when I reached them. I walked in and saw all the candles lit, making all the gold ornaments in the room sparkle. The priest must still be working. But when I stepped inside the sanctuary, he wasn't there. Dimitri was, however. He sat in the last pew. He wasn't praying or kneeling or anything. He just sat there, looking quite relaxed. Although he wasn't a practicing member of the church, he'd told me he often found peace there. It gave him a chance to think about his life and the deeds he'd done. I always thought he looked good. But just then, something about him nearly made me come to a standstill. Maybe it was because of the background, all the polished wood and colorful icons of saints. Maybe it was just the way the candlelight shone on his dark hair. Maybe it was just because he looked unguarded, almost vulnerable. He was normally so wound up, so on edge, but even he needed the occasional moment of rest. He seemed to glow in my eyes, kind of in the way Lissa always did. His normal tension returned when he heard me come in. "Rose, is everything okay?" He started to stand, and I motioned him down as I slid into the spot beside him. The faint smell of incense lingered in the air. "Yeah, well, kind of. No breakdowns, if that's what you're worried about. I just had a question, or, well, a theory." I explained the conversation with Alice and what I'd deduced from it. He listened patiently, expression thoughtful. "I know Alice. I'm not sure she's credible," he said when I finished. It was similar to what he'd said about Victor. "I know, I thought the same thing, but a lot of it makes sense." "Not quite. As you pointed out, why are your visions so irregular here? That doesn't go along with the ward theory. You should feel like you did on the plane." "What if the wards are just weak?" I asked. He shook his head. "That's impossible. Wards take months to wear down. New ones are put in place here every 2 weeks." "That often?" I asked, unable to hide my disappointment. I'd known maintenance was frequent, but not that frequent. Alice's theory had almost provided a sound explanation, one that didn't involve me being insane. "Maybe they're getting staked," I suggested. "By humans or something, like we saw before." "Guardians walk the grounds a few times a day. If there was a stake in the borders of campus, we'd notice." I sighed. Dimitri moved his hand over mine, and I flinched. He didn't remove it, though. And as he did so frequently, guessed my thoughts. "You thought if she was right, it would explain everything." I nodded. "I don't want to be crazy." "You aren't crazy. But you don't believe I'm really seeing ghosts?" He glanced away, his eyes staring at the flickering of candles on the altar. "I don't know. I'm still trying to keep an open mind, and being stressed isn't the same as being crazy." "I know," I admitted, still very conscious of how warm his hand was. I shouldn't have been thinking about things like that in church. "But, well, there's something else." I told him then about Anna possibly catching Vladimir's insanity. I also explained Adrian's aura observations. He turned his gaze back on me,
Expression, speculative. Have you told anyone else about this? Lissa? Your counselor?
No, I said in a small voice, unable to meet his eyes. I was afraid of what they'd think.
He squeezed my hand. You have to stop this. You aren't afraid of throwing yourself in the path of danger, but you're terrified of letting anyone in.
I don't know, I said, looking up at him. I guess.
Then why'd you tell me?
I smiled. Because you told me I should trust people. I trust you.
You don't trust Lissa?
My smile faltered. I trust her, absolutely, but I don't want to tell her things that'll make her worry. I guess it's a way of protecting her, just like keeping Strigoi away.
She's stronger than you think, he said, and she would go out of her way to help you.
So what? You want me to confide in her and not you?
No, I want you to confide in both of us. I think it'd be good for you. Does what happened to Anna bother you?
No. I looked away again. It scares me.
I think the admission stunned both of us. I certainly hadn't expected to say it.
We both froze for a moment, and then Dimitri wrapped his arms around me and pulled me to his chest. A sob built up in me as I rested my cheek against the leather of his coat and heard the steady beating of his heart.
I don't want to be like that, I told him. I want to be like everyone else. I want my mind to be normal. Normal by Rose standards, I mean. I don't want to lose control. I don't want to be like Anna and kill myself. I love being alive. I'd die to save my friends, but I hope it doesn't happen. I hope we all live long, happy lives. Like Lissa said, one big, happy family. There's so much I want to do, but I'm so scared. Scared that I'll be like her. I'm afraid I won't be able to stop it.
He held me tighter.
It's not going to happen, he murmured. You're wild and impulsive, but at the end of the day, you're one of the strongest people I know. Even if you are the same as Anna, and I don't think you are, you two won't share the same fate.
It was funny. I'd often told Lissa the same thing about her and Vladimir. She'd always had a hard time believing it, and now I understood. Giving advice was a lot harder than following it.
You're also missing something, he continued, running a hand over my hair. If you are in danger from Lissa's magic, then at least you understand why. She can stop using her magic, and that'll be the end of it.
I pulled away slightly so I could look at him. Hastily, I ran my hand over my eyes in case any tears had escaped. But can I ask her to do that? I said. I've felt how it makes her feel. I don't know if I can take that away from her.
He regarded me with surprise. Even at the cost of your own life?
Vladimir did great things. So could she. Besides, they come first, right?
Not always.
I stared. I'd had "they come first" drilled into me since I was a child. It was what all guardians believed. Only the damn peers who'd run away from their duty didn't subscribe to that. What he said was almost like treason.
Sometimes, Rose, you have to know when to put yourself first.
I shook my head. Not with Lissa. I might as well have been with Deirdre or Ambrose again. Why was everyone suddenly challenging something I'd held as absolute truth my entire life?
She's your friend. She'll understand.
To make his point, he reached forward and tugged at the tchotchke peeking out underneath my sleeve, his fingertips brushing my wrist. It's more than that, I said. I pointed to the cross. If anything, this proves it. I'm bound to her, to protect the Dragomirs at all costs.
I know, but...
He didn't finish. And honestly, what could he have said? This was becoming an old argument, one without solution.
I need to get back, I said abruptly. It's past curfew.
A wry smile crossed Dimitri's face.
And you need me to get you back, or you'll get in trouble.
Well,
Yeah, I was kind of hoping.
We heard some rustling near the door of the sanctuary, and Father Andrew walked in, which definitely ended our session. He was getting ready to shut down the chapel. Dimitri thanked him, and then the two of us headed back to the Dampier dorm. Neither of us spoke along the way, but it was a comfortable silence. It was weird, but since his outburst outside the med clinic, I felt something had intensified between us, as impossible as that seemed. Dimitri got me past the woman at the front desk, and just as I was about to head off for my wing, a guardian named Yuri walked by. Dimitri called to him.
You've been working with security, haven't you? When was the last time they laid new wards?
Yuri considered.
Couple days ago. Why?
Dimitri gave me a meaningful look. Just curious. I nodded to Dimitri to show that I understood his point, and then I went off to bed. After that, the next week or so played out in a repetitive pattern. I followed Christian for 3 days a week, had my counseling sessions, and trained with Dimitri. During those times, I could see the concern on Dimitri's face. He always asked how I was, but didn't push me to talk about anything I didn't want to. Mostly, it was all physical training, which I liked since it didn't require too much ruminating. Best of all, I didn't see Mason during this time. I also didn't witness any attacks, of either the Mana type or the Guardian type. We were in full throes of the field experience, and every other novice in my class was having regular fights. The tests grew intricate and more difficult, and everyone had to stay on their toes. Eddie seemed to have to defend Lissa every other day from some guardian playing Strigoi, but it never happened when I was around. In fact, no attacks at all happened to anyone when I was around. After a while, I began to get the idea. They were going soft on me. They were worried I couldn't handle it. They might as well have cut me from the field experience after all, I grumbled to Christian one evening. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, but if you still pass, why worry about it?
I mean, do you actually want to get into a fight every day? He then rolled his eyes.
Never mind, of course you do.
You don't understand, I told him. This job isn't about taking the easy way out. I want to prove what I can do. To them and to myself. You can never get enough practice. I mean, Lissa's life is at stake. And also possibly my future with her. I'd worried before they might decide to replace me, and that was before they thought I was nuts. It was nearly curfew time, and I was dropping him off for the night. He shook his head.
Rose, I don't know if you're crazy or not, but I'm actually starting to think you might be the best guardian, or soon to be guardian, out there.
Did you just give me a serious compliment? I asked. He turned his back on me and headed inside his dorm.
Good night.
My life was still in chaos, but I couldn't help a small grin as I headed back toward my dorm. The walk always made me nervous, since I now lived in perpetual fear of seeing Mason. There were other people scurrying back before curfew, too, though, and he mostly tended to show up when I was alone, either because he preferred the privacy or because he really was a figment of my imagination. Talking about Lissa reminded me that I'd hardly seen her today. Comfortable and content, I let my mind slip into hers while my body continued its walk. She was in the library, hurriedly trying to finish up some notes. Eddie stood near her, glancing around.
Better hurry up, he said teasingly. She's making another round.
Almost done, Lissa said, scrawling a few more words. She shut the textbook just as the librarian came by and told them they had to leave now. With a sigh of relief, Lissa stuffed her papers into her bag and followed Eddie out. He picked it up and carried it over his shoulder as they went.
You don't have to do that, she said. You aren't my valet.
You can have it back as soon as you fix that.
He gestured to where she was tangled up in her coat. She'd shoved it on while trying to get out of the library on time. She laughed at her own disorderliness and adjusted the inside-out sleeve.
Thanks, she said when he handed it back.
No problem.
Lissa liked Eddie, though not in a romantic kind of way. She just thought he was nice. He did things like that all the time, helping her out while still doing an excellent job in his duties. His motives weren't romantic either. He was just one of those rare guys who could be both a gentleman and a badass. She had plans for him.
Have you ever thought about asking Rose out?
What?
He asked.
What? I thought.
You guys just have so much in common, she said, trying to sound casual. Inside, she was excited. She thought this was the best idea in the world. For me, it was one of those moments where being in her mind was being too close to her. I would rather have been standing beside her so I could shake some sense into her.
She's just my friend, he laughed, his face taking on kind of acute shyness. And I don't think we'd actually be that compatible. Besides,
his expression fell.
I could never go out with Mason's girlfriend.
Lissa started to say what I always told her, that I hadn't actually been Mason's girlfriend. Wisely, she instead chose to let Eddie keep believing the best.
Everyone has to move on sometime.
It hasn't been that long, not really, just over a month, and it's not really something you get over quickly.
His eyes had a sad, faraway look that hurt both Lissa and me.
I'm sorry, she said.
I didn't mean to make it sound like something small. What you saw, I know it was horrible.
You know what's weird? I actually don't remember much of it. And that's what's horrible. I was so drugged out that I had no idea what was going on. I hate that. You have no idea. Being helpless like that, it's the worst thing in the world.
I felt the same way. I think it was a guardian thing. Eddie and I had never talked about it, though. We'd never even talked about Spokane much.
It wasn't your fault, Lissa told him. Strigoi endorphins are strong. You couldn't have fought against them.
I should have tried harder, he countered, holding the door to her dorm open. If I'd been even a little more conscious, I don't know, Mason might still be alive.
Eddie and I realized, should both have been in therapy as soon as we got back from winter break. I finally understood why everyone said blaming myself for Mason's death was irrational. Eddie and I were both holding ourselves responsible for things that had been beyond our control. We were torturing ourselves with guilt we didn't deserve.
Hey, Lissa, come here.
The serious subject was put on hold as Jesse and Ralph waved at her from across the dorm's lobby. My defenses immediately went up. So did hers. She didn't like them any better than I did.
What's this about?
Eddie asked warily. I don't know, she muttered, walking over. I hope it's fast. Jesse gave her a dazzling smile, one that I once found really hot. Now I saw it for the fake piece of crap it was.
How's it going?
He asked.
It's going tired, she replied. I need to get to bed. What's up?
Jesse looked over at Eddie.
Would you give us a little privacy?
Eddie looked at Lissa. She nodded, and Eddie backed up enough to be out of earshot, but still watch her. When he was gone, Jesse said,
We have an invitation for you.
To what, a party?
Kind of. It's a group.
Ralph wasn't so good with words, and Jesse took over again.
More than a group. It's only for elite people.
He gestured around.
You, and me, and Ralph. We're not like a lot of other Maroi. We're not even like a lot of other royals. We have concerns and issues that we need to take care of.
I thought it was funny that he'd include Ralph. Ralph's royalty came from his mother, Avoda, so he didn't even carry one of the royal names, even if he technically had the blood.
It sounds kind of snobby, she said. No offense. Thanks for the offer, though.
That was Lissa. Always polite, even to creeps like these.
You don't understand. We aren't just sitting around. We're working to get things done. We're...
He hesitated and then spoke more softly. Working on ways to get our voices out there. To make people see our way no matter what. Lissa gave an uncomfortable laugh.
Sounds like compulsion.
So?
I couldn't see her face, but I could feel her working hard to keep it as straight as possible.
Are you out of your mind? Compulsions forbidden.